The problem in trading is like people want to run before learning how to walk. I think it's important to know what you're good at.
I just had the pleasure of spending an hour with Pierre. You may know him as Pierre Crypto. I've been following him for a number of years on crypto Twitter. He's definitely an OG in the space. And in this episode, we deep dive into his trading system. We talk about trends, we talk about his trend setup, we talk about the indicators he uses, we talk about his approach to taking profit, to stop losses, to news-driven events, to time frames, as well as a deep dive into some of his best and worst trades and what he learned from them. I'm sure there'll be a lot for you to learn from this episode, and I hope you have as much fun as I had recording it by listening back. Enjoy the podcast with Pierre. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Pierre Crypto, someone who I've been following for a long time. How are you, Pierre?
Fantastic, fantastic. How about you?
Pretty good. The summer chop is it's tempting to like jump in and trade.
Yeah.
But, thankfully, there's just so much going on with Pierre that I don't need to. But maybe a good segue to introduce yourself, Pierre, who you are and how you got started in crypto.
Okay, all right. I'm a trader slash investor in crypto, mostly trader. Been active in the market. I would say I've been active in the market since 2017, however, I don't think we can call my first few years in the market as trading, and I would call it more bullying than anything else. But yeah, I've basically been trading crypto 2017, which I believe is a fairly classic kind of profile. I came from initially more esports, and that's basically where I discovered crypto initially, alongside thanks to the advices of my older brother in 2017, who were basically telling me to give it a shot, give a look at it. But yeah, I'm mostly known to be trading altcoins with a focus on trying to identify and ride trends as best as possible, while obviously also being able to identify the lack of it while it's been mostly the case for the past few months, to be honest. But yeah, so that's how I would describe myself, a trend trader with a few years of experience with the market now, to be honest, because time flies. It's been already 7 to 8 years now. It's pretty crazy to think about it.
Well, yeah, time. If you think about it compared to 2017, that's really crazy. Can you remember back to 2017 and the first token you ever bought? Was it Bitcoin or ETH, or was it something like some altcoin of some sort?
The first thing I've ever bought was Bitcoin, but I've really rapidly, when I arrived, it was early to mid 2017. So it was already a period where altcoins were kind of exploding with the entire ICO mania back in the day. So the first token I bought was Bitcoin, followed by ETH. But the first few trades, which I believe hooked me forever and made me an instant crypto stripe to only focus on the charts where Litecoin and Ripple. We, again, I don't think it's very original as a profile, but I think we pretty basically all, a lot of us got hooked by this 2017 mania that there was back then. So yeah, it was Litecoin and Ripple, which both hooked me forever in terms of how much you can make, but also basically absolutely humbled me the following year, which I believe has been structural in the way I'm seeing market till nowadays and how I've decided to approach the market ever since. I think the 2017 up to 2020 were very structural years for my entire approach.
And so thinking back to 2017, because I want to get into your trend strategy in a bit, but thinking back to 2017. Right through to 2020, which were, as you say, like very educational in nature. What was your strategy back then? Were you into trend trading, or were you more kind of sentiment analysis and just going based on what was hyped?
In 2017, I don't think, and honestly, up until 2019, I would say early 2020, I don't think I could say I had any kind of strategy or hedge in the market, to be honest. It was mostly, as you said, a sentiment following on Twitter, but it was a different time and a much more forgivable time, at least in the usual hype window cycle that the market tends to be every 4 years. So it was mostly just, I just opened Binance, or I just opened the latest application that I'm using, and I can see that this coin is up 30% in the day. It might be times two tomorrow. But that there was literally nothing more than that. And it was a period of time where, again, I believe, like many people who are trading the market, and I've been trading the market, I think it was a period of time where I tried a lot of things, tried to see what was working or not. I was exploring a lot of things, I would say, technical analysis speaking, and things like this. I don't think we can call that a strategy whatsoever.
So what was it? Was it, like, if you don't mind me asking, was it some kind of visceral drawdown that made you learn and study trading?
Yeah, 2018 was very brutal because I feel like it was I don't know if you see what Dunning-Kruger is, the chart, and basically...
Dunning-Kruger effect, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I think I've been a perfect living example of that. And I basically finished 2017 and started 2018 with the last run from Ripple. And I was certain I was a genius back then because I was in the market for 6-7 months and I had like absolutely multiplied my account. And I was like, well, okay, it's not complicated after all. But the truth always comes. And whenever you think like this, usually it means that the market is going to slap you in the face pretty harshly. And it's exactly what happened. 2018 arrived. You basically had no options. When it came to shitcoin, you basically had two options. It was selling or holding. You, at this point in the market, we didn't yet had a lot of places where we could short the market or things like this. You had BitMEX, which had a few products, but it was mostly on Bitcoin and ETH, if I'm not mistaken. And I ended up being round tripping everything that I've made in 2017. Yeah, back to step one, if not back to step zero. And yeah, it was a pretty humbling experience, but also pretty devastating one. I never needed that money. At this point, I was just graduated from my engineering school and I had a job on the sideline. So it was not like life-threatening or financially threatening situation. But as someone who has been, I have a big competitive ego and a very big competitive approach. And to me, it was like, yeah, okay, never again. Ideally, never again. And I do think that this year, 2018, early 2019, yeah, was basically what made, I think it induced it myself, some PTSD that has helped me a lot through the years, but also somehow held me back a few times since.
Yeah, it's very real, this PTSD from 2018, and even people who traded the 2021 cycle as well. And
I think it's inevitable, to be honest. Like, I think it's a good thing to have this PTSD if you try to make lessons off of it. I think it's in most cases it's a good thing, but yeah, as I said, I think it has helped me a lot over the years, essentially to keep my gains. But there are chances that it actually also held me back to make more gains sometimes. But I think it's a balance to find between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's definitely an advantage in a market like this, which is range bound and choppy, and that PTSD can make you just take profit and be a bit more nimble with your positioning or wait for better setups. Sometimes when the market, like I underperform in the left curve markets where you just need to buy some meme coins and hold them, because I overthink everything. I do too much analysis. And like Bonk is a great example, right? I bought this thing at 10 million market cap and I just overthought it. I was like, no, the macro context is just not there to like do a meme coin. Yeah, Pepe happened, but it was a one-off on Ethereum. Is the community really there on Solana?
Yeah.
I got burnt on this other meme coin at 20 million market cap. I should have sold. Like so many of these things, but like you say, they have pros and cons, and as long as you're aware of them, then you can move forward. Speaking of which, then I want to dive into the essence of your strategy. So you mentioned that your strategy is trend following.
Yeah,
a lot of people will follow you on Twitter and know that you're very much a respecter of trend lines and moving averages.
Yeah,
I would love to hear it from the man himself as to what your strategy looks like and the key things that you're looking for.
So, one of the key things that I would describe my system in my approach is simplicity, like it, which is, which doesn't mean it's easy, but I try to keep it as simple as possible. And basically it translates into some simple tactical analysis with a combination of just basic horizontal level and looking for congruence with trends and highlighting trends with a couple of moving averages. And basically the idea is just one of the main conclusions that I've made through the years trading shitcoins is that it's a very trending market. In short windows of time, the market is going to be internally trendy, and you need to be able to identify as early as possible when the trend is shift and when there is something to do in these markets. And from there, you need to have a simpler approach to follow that trend and basically try to maximize the exposure until the system tells you that it's likely not going to trend as much as it did. So I would say it's a mix between very simple technical analysis, very simple technical analysis approach, some sort of narrative analysis, or even if this current cycle hasn't been the best example of that, because compared to previous cycles, I feel like this one has been much more fragmented and much more isolated in very few places compared to previous cycles where you had at least one or two isolated narratives going on in the alt markets. So very simple technical analysis approach. Basically, it can be dumbed down by, is price above what I consider to be a trend indicator? It opens the door for the green button. No, okay, just wait for whenever it's the case. And a lot of gut feeling, of course. The more I trade through the years, the bigger I leave space for gut feeling. The very basics of the system is to have a very simple approach, very simple technical analysis-based approach with trying to not overthink, as you just said with the example of Bong, really just being prices above trends. Okay, I'm fine keeping the position for now, basically. And it's also combined, which is, it's not my proudest trading strategy, but for the past 3 years, I've been focused a lot on investing in idioclasmy. And what I mean by that is left curving as much as possible and trying not to overthink the narratives that I trade and simply consider that if it's trending, I'm fine trading it. Even if it doesn't make sense to me and even if I find it dumb, the truth is that it's likely where it's the best money to be made in this market still.
Absolutely. And so for the people here who are traders and they're on TradingView, they might know what a moving average is. What are the indicators you're looking for? Because your charts are very like simple in many ways, yeah. But there are a few trend lines that you've got to look.
Well, basically, there are a few things that I'm using. I'm using a simple set of moving averages, exponential moving averages. So it's just the basics moving averages, but moving a little bit more aggressively, which value is between 10 and 30, basically. And I that's what I call the trend. Historically, I've realized that this set of moving averages tend to be a very good indicator of what is the trend in the short term. And it replicates nicely from hourly to weekly basis. And then I had to that a couple of other moving averages, which I use as bigger period, like 100 MA and 200 EMAs. And I use this to play whenever the trend stops, whenever the set of moving averages that I use as trend is lost. Usually, you're going to have 100 MA and 200 MA above if it was a downtrend or below if it was an uptrend. And I use these gaps between the trend and 100 moving averages and 200 EMA to capture moves as soon as the trend ends, which basically offers a trend approach whenever the trend is intact. And whenever we have signs of potential reversal, we can also either hedge in case it's just a deviation, playing those gaps, or you can basically decide to flip at what you believe to be a turning point for the trend. So it's, I don't have an approach like some people can have when it comes to moving averages in terms of crosses and things like this, which I believe is too laggy to me, because in the end, moving averages are just imaginary lines, lagging indicator on the market, on the chart. I don't use crosses. What I use is just price above what I consider to be the trend, good. And if it's not the case, I use the gaps between the trend and 100 MA and 200 EMA to capture some of these moves. And one recent good example can be Bitcoin right now, which has been in a daily downtrend since the 70K region. And on lower time frame, you basically had some gaps to play since it went to 58K, and it allows to trade counter trend using fairly simple system, fairly simple setups on a shorter time frame. So it's a mix of all of that. But again, it's a combination of a few moving averages and nothing more, basically.
And then the time frame, you alluded to it, but you like to look at things from anywhere between one hour and 1 week time frames.
The trend. My two favorite time frames, and I believe it comes from the fact that I'm not particularly a very good scalper. I do much better when I'm swinging, and I do much better when... Basically, I realized that I'm a very mid-curve trader, very mid-curve approach about the market. Like a majority of traders, it's not going to be complicated to make a plan. It's going to be much more complicated to execute it. And it's also why I ended up going for a system with the most simplest approach so that I can leave less room for the execution to be a mess. And I realized that H4 and daily were the two time frames where I was the most comfortable with in terms of time expectancy for the trades and also the gaps to chase or the trends to ride usually are much a bit more reliable on those time frames. But I know people using the system from 15 minutes to the weekly, and basically as long as there has been a trend or there is a trend to ride, the system can basically apply.
Interesting. And so this trend, I think you said it in terms of hedging, but does this mean you are doing long and shorts at any given time, or do you prefer just to trade the long side?
Yeah, no, I'm very pragmatic. I will just trade whatever the higher time frame trend dictates. Whenever if we just stick to Bitcoin, as long as it's above the daily trend or the weekly trend, I'm going to mostly focus on the long side, with trying to capture gap fills, as I said, on lower time frames, but mostly at edges, as long as the main swing is open. But I don't care much if it has to be up or down, as long as there is a trend. If it has to be to the downside, we spend as much time, if not more, in downside than in upside in crypto in the 4 year cycles. I need to be okay with the fact of playing both sides. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think it must be something close to 2/3 longs, 1/3 short, or something like this in terms of repartition of trades. But obviously, it depends highly on the overall context and environment. But for example, over the past 5 months, where Bitcoin has been stuck in the same range and had quite the downsides, it was mostly flat or long on Bitcoin while being more heavily short on shitcoins.
And so a form of like pair trading of sorts, like having a portfolio of positions?
Sorry?
Is that to say that you had like a few pair trades running at any given time as well? Like you were long Bitcoin and short some other stuff? Or?
Oh yeah, I won't necessarily call it pair trading because I think some people are doing fantastic doing pair trade in the market, and usually it's some giga brains, but most of the time the correlation between assets is not clean enough to me to be making this kind of pair trade in the market. But I treat them separately. I'm not going to be edging my long Bitcoin exposure using Altshop. It's mostly just I'm seeing a setup that fits my criteria. It's a setup that it's a setup that has a clean enough exit strategy. I'm just going to go for it no matter what I think about Bitcoin in the sideline.
And so thank you for that summary of your trend line and your setup. So is all your execution discretionary, or do you have some kind of algos running for the trend models?
Yeah, it's fully discretionary. And it's a question I've been asked a lot, because as the system is based off of simple rules, a few set of very simple rules, as I was saying earlier, is price above trend, how much is there to gap, or things like this. I feel like it could be easily automated, at least... I think the part that could be easily automated would be the part where it gives you signals on what fit the criteria for trades. But then as it's trend following, and because it's only imaginary lines on the chart, and because retests are more often ugly than clean, there is a lot of gut feeling that's needed. So I think some people on CT have been automated the market approach that I have. I don't know how well they've been doing, but I know a few people have tried. But personally, so yeah, fully discretionary. Maybe it's something that could be thought about a little bit more on my hand. Maybe in a few years when I have more data to work with and when the system is a little bit more perfected and I know a little bit more on what can be a better focus than the rest. But as of today, fully discretionary. And I kind of feel like it's also what drives me in this market. I don't know. I still feel some things whenever I enter or exit a trade. I would be sad to lose that. Even if it's not always pleasure, even if it's not always happiness, I don't know. I kind of like pulling the triggers.
No, fair enough. I think it comes down to your intuition as well. You only get that gut feeling for the market and how it's trading by spending so many hours looking at the charts. And it's one thing to set a system and an algo up, but in crypto, the trend can change very quickly.
Yeah.
Or the dynamics and the names and the tokens that people want to trade can change so quickly. So earlier this year, you had like very clear trend on some AI names.
Exactly, yeah. That's exactly what I was about to say is that as we discussed at the beginning of the podcast, this cycle has been a little bit more fragmented in terms of trends within ads. And it makes sense in some ways because it's been a Bitcoin-driven cycle. It was mostly driven at the beginning, at least by Bitcoin ETF speculation and things like this. So it makes sense that the ad market has been less interesting than it could have been on previous cycles. But as you said, because the trends and the narratives tend to shift fairly rapidly in this market, you need to have some gut feeling on things that you consider as interesting to focus on or not. And as you said, there is also a lot of correlation between assets. I feel like it would need at least some inputs to know on which narratives and which trends to focus on and then shift the algo from a basket to another, for example, more than anything. But I guess someone has already done it because it's a very simple system. I don't think I'm the only one that has ever thought about approaching the market that way. I don't think I have the most optimal way of playing it using the tools I use. So I guess someone has already done it. But yeah, personally, I feel like you still need a little bit of gut feeling. And actually, again, the more I trade, the more I leave room for that gut feeling and the less my rules are strict, basically.
In fact, so we had a question from the community. I told them that me and you were going to hop on this podcast and they said they've tried a lot of trend trading, but they wanted to know, how do you react to like a news-driven catalyst? So let's say, for example, you're establishing a trend on Ethereum and then this ETF out of nowhere is likely to get approved and you've got this 20% candle. Clearly, like there's a lot of UPNL on the table. Trend is still in place, but do you exercise discretion at that point to take profit and just reevaluate?
It's an interesting question. News trading, because the idea is to be, usually I kind of feel like trends are often a signal of new spending in sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that indeed, and it's even more true lately, that the news, you need to have an eye on news, especially when you're trend trading. And to me, I don't have a golden rule on that or a strict rule that can be applied to any kind of news or whatever. But if we take the example of ETH that you just use, if, for example, I was to be long before the news comes out printing a 20% candle, even if the trend is not lost, that could be enough for me to justify triggering a take profit, even if it's not fully, at least partially, and mostly because it gets out of the window of the trend only being the main factor of things moving. But again, I don't have like a strict rule on that. That's one of the things I try to be more fluid with over time and try to be more, okay, I know the trend is not over, but even if I was just riding the trend, maybe that 20% move was what I should have hoped to capture eventually. So maybe it's a good enough reason to be capturing some profits. And outside of that, I feel like diving in lower time frame in those kind of moments can be a good approach to try to see if there is any sort of follow-up off of the news or if after the candle news induced, you fail to see lower time frame trend being defended, it might be a good indicator that most of the move that had to be cured by the news has already happened. So it's a mix of both. I wish there was a more defined and structured answer to those kind of thing. But I generally feel like when we talk about gut feeling needed, it's one of those perfect examples indeed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think one thing you're very good at is sharing not only your trade setups, but also saying, hey, look, I'm taking a partial TP here, or I have a TP1, a TP2, and a TP3. Whereas yeah. what most people do is they have a TP1 only, and it's $5,000 ETH, and they get
they
get annoyed when they're stopped out on the downside.
Well, we talked earlier about PTSD, and I feel like it might be in those moments that you can actually see, or that might be a light bulb in your brain activating when you see these kind of things, and you're like, well, this is a situation that I tend to round trip heavily usually. So maybe this time, instead of being mad at myself for paying myself, I can only hope to be mad at myself for paying myself too early, because it would mean the market is about to trend again. Usually, one thing that I tell myself when I'm in this kind of situation, whether it rushing into a take profits or being invalidated on a setup, usually what I tell myself is, most often than not, respecting my exit strategies or paying myself or accepting being stopped out has rewarded me more than trying to fight it, and give it 24 hours. If the sentiment that I have after exiting the position hasn't changed 24 hours later, look for a re-entry basically, or look for a new plan to execute. But usually a 24-hour window in crypto is long enough for your BAs to be either confirmed or denied in some cases. So yeah, I'm still trying to talk to myself and say these kind of things on these kind of situations.
No, constant learning and a good question from the person that asked that. One final question, Pierre, before we pivot a little bit and talk about the mental side of trading, is with regards to funding. So clearly you're holding some of these positions, you're using leverage. How much does funding come into your consideration when taking a position? How actively do you monitor it and take it into consideration?
So I have a fairly in and out approach in the market, meaning that most often than not, and even when it comes to Bitcoin, if price is not above trend, or if price is not in what I consider to be a daily uptrend, most often than not, I'm going to be flat. A focus as the trading folio grows and as the sizing increases, obviously because the impacts are getting bigger and more important. I don't use funding as a sentiment like some people do, and thinking, oh, okay, look at the funding, there is a squeeze brewing or things like this. Most often than not, I interpret it more as cost of business, meaning that if we are in a strong daily uptrend, then the funding is paying people to be short, basically. I don't treat that as a signal that the market is overheating. I'm much more into interpreting it as a signal that people want to be long, are willing to pay for it, meaning that we are mostly in a strong trend, obviously up until it breaks, because very often it breaks. In those situations, you can only hope for the trend that it moved high enough so that if it had to stop, you already captured something big. But no, in terms of funding that I'm actually paying, yeah, it's something that I monitor a lot and more and more. And that can sometimes justify sizing down or backing out on the sizing of bets that I'm willing to take, because I don't know, maybe it's part of trying to have a cleaner addiction and a cleaner approach of the market. It's the two ways I'm seeing funding, like how much I'm willing to pay and how much are other people willing to pay, basically.
But nevertheless, an important part of your system, and it's pretty much a good indicator of PVP as well, right? Like,
I do believe it is, but I wouldn't have a definitive thought on it, because it's not particularly the part of my system that has been the most well thought. Again, I use it. I would say I use it as a sideline indicator whenever we are in what I consider to be heavy trending situations, which are most of the time a short period of time you're going to spend on the market. And outside of that, it's obviously something that I monitor whenever I'm in a lot of positions on whenever I'm willing to bet the bigger size on something, for example.
Makes total sense. So if I can change tact a little bit here, Pierre. So normally we see you on crypto Twitter, and 80% of the time you're sharing charts and setups and stuff, which is really kind of golden value. And then the rest of the time, it appears that you're either skiing or having a beer or doing both at the same time. So I'd love to understand what a day in the life of Pierre as a trader looks like, and how you achieve that balance between like work and having a good social life as well.
Well, I personally think that the time you should be extremely active on the market likely represents something like 20% of the time spent in front of the charts, and the rest of the time should be planning, adjusting, journaling, and waiting mostly. And maybe this percentage can change depending on how crazy the years we have ahead of us or not. But for example, this year, if you tell me that you've been trading very actively for 4 weeks out of the 6 months we just did, I wouldn't be surprised. So there is a balance between that. It's going to depend a lot depending on market conditions. Obviously, as a trend trader, it makes sense. And I try to respect that as much as possible, because one of the main reasons I'm trend trading is because I know I do poorly in choppy condition, and that I should avoid the market as much as possible when it happens. And I think it's where you can see me spend quite some time skiing during the winter and quite some time in south of France during the summer, mostly because most of the time I shouldn't be trading the market, and I try not to. But basically, the day in my life, whenever we have trending conditions, is usually up until New York Open, which for me is around 3 p.m. in France. Anything before that is work for the Haven, work on market analysis, on trade updates, scan the market. Usually, I have a watch list that I try to keep as straight as possible. It's not a static watch list. It changes a lot depending on what I believe to be the focus is to have up or down in shitcoins. Most of the early day planning and updating things that are running, and the rest of the day from New York Open till New York close is usually where most of the trading happen. But again, because I'm not a scalper, there will be days where if setup are still valid and target or stop losses have not been hit, I basically just sit on my hands and let things unfold. And I think it's what frees me a fairly good amount of time to do other things on the sideline. And one last thing that I would add is that one of the reasons I decided to do this job as a living was to be able to free a little bit more time in my life to do things that I really enjoy doing for as long as I can and as long as I'm young enough, skiing, for example. So I try to manage my life so that I can do that.
That's really good advice and a good reminder for a lot of our listeners. I think the people who have recently either gone part or full time in crypto trading, to remember that the reason why they did this is freedom, and staring at a chart for 15, 16 hours a day, as much as people will glamorize it as a learning curve, it isn't financial freedom, right? You are locked in.
Something that I often say is that with this job, I don't have Mondays, but I don't have Sundays neither. It's up to you to find there is a few things in that. First, I think it's important for people to accept and realize that not everyone could be a godlike low time frame scalper like Nexus can be, for example. Not everyone can and not everyone should. And the problem is that a lot of people are trying too hard. And a lot of people are trying to get into scalping before even having a little bit more experience with the other ways of trading. I think it was Jim a few years ago that told me a phrase that kept into my mind. I think he said something like, the problem in trading is like people want to run before learning how to walk. I think it's important to know what you're good at. If you're very good at scalping, just do that all day long. Perfectly fine. Some people are much better at that than run trading or holding positions for some time. But yeah, basically find something that fits your lifestyle, fits your personality, and just try to be good at this first before even considering improving on other parts of your trading.
Amazing. Really, really good advice. And keep your size low whilst you whilst you learn those things, because one thing you need to do in this environment particularly is survive, right?
Exactly. I spend a lot of time there. The window of time in the market where I'm criticized is actually very small compared to the rest of the time. Like for the past 6 months, most of the training I've done, I've done it with a fairly reduced size that I would usually have when the market is in much more trending environment. Mostly because I know myself. I know that if I try to trade the market the same way I trade it when it trends, while it's ranging, I'm most likely going to absolutely demolish myself. Simple as that. So usually, I tend to think that whenever market is not in what is the conditions that it's the best for you, size down until you can gamble more. Yeah. Another thing Loma was saying, for example, is that you should trade the same way the market moves. And if it's low, you have basically zero reason to be absolutely trying to smash the market all day long.
Absolutely. I think good advice for people who feel like they have to be in a trade or have to be in the market is you can just do like a smaller trade and work out your percentage hit rate or win rate.
It's something I've been struggling so much in my trading, and still today it's likely one of my main issue, not being able to just say, okay, I don't have to trade that. So usually I satisfy that addiction, maybe we can call it that way, or that incapacity to fight. I usually fight it by reducing the size and scaling up if the market becomes more forgivable and more trendy. I'm discussing that because, again, I'm a very mid-cap trader, and I would be surprised if that's not a problem that a vast majority of market participants are facing. So it never hurts to say it out loud.
No, dude. I've traded for like 10 plus years, so some of that time on a big trading floor, and I struggle with some of these concepts. Even in the summer, it was very well known that you should, and very telegraphed, that you just need to sell in May and go away.
It's the same.
I find myself on the 1st of May being like, no, this year is different. Got to trade.
This time is different, obviously. I mean, it has to be, because if it's not, it's going to be boring, right? So it has to be different.
Last year skewed us a little as well, because this time last year we got the BlackRock ETF filing.
And before that, we had the ACC going after Coinbase, Binance, saying the SOL and all the hats were securities. So yeah, I would agree with you that last year, mid-June up until mid-July, was absolutely nuts in terms of volatility in the market.
It was. And I think it's changed. It's made people feel like, oh, well, I missed it last summer. All these big events, and it was ETF news, so let me do it this year. Let me redeem myself with ETH. And then you've just seen this huge crypto native leverage build up in ETH, and it's not been surprising to me, at least, to see ETH leverage buyers just get completely chopped up.
Yeah, and you also have the factor that we've had halving in April, and that it was the first halving for a lot of new people. And despite saying, careful, look at the way things have been moving after the halving in 2020, maybe this time is not different. And it's been ranging, obviously, ever since. But I also think it's why I ended up with a trending system. Because, and it's something I often say, is that if something is good at highlighting something, it's by definition good at highlighting the lack of it. And being able to understand that, at least off of your simple rules, the market is not showing any kind of trending behavior, you should back out if that's your way of making money on the market. And it's the complicated part, accepting that, okay, well, we're going to get bored, and you likely have nothing to do, no business to do right now. And again, I think it's something that's a bit different from last cycle, is that, for example, last two previous cycles, even when we had time of chop on Bitcoin or in activity on the market, or even downside, we still always had some sort of isolated trend in ads that was at least sustainable for a few weeks. Like, we can go back all the way down to Binance IEOs. We had DeFi summer. We had early NFTs, first meme legs, AI lately. Last cycle, we had Solunavax with the L1 battles. We always had some sort of an isolated trend to ride. This cycle, it's been true, but it's been much more concentrated in period of times. We've had very strong AI window. I would say in part of a couple of weeks between late 2022 and four, and every time in windows of a few weeks, we had a big spike and big trending environment. But it's, and same with meme, obviously. I think it's been less forgivable in terms of navigating narratives this cycle. We are not going to go in depth on that, but I personally read it as a sign of the market health itself. Like, it's a surprise for no one that we are, as an industry, in the shitcoins world at least, things are stalling a little bit, and we're lacking any kind of new innovations or things like this that could drive some proper narratives, in my opinion. I think it's just the industry maturing a little bit and just realizing that, well, we might have not, maybe we are not in a situation right now, post FTX crash and things like this, where we're going to have enough of a strong narrative to ride in shitcoins outside of the memes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's been a transition year in terms of how crypto price action trades. And yeah, all traders have had to adjust and will continue to have to adjust, especially with ETFs and a changing market dynamic as well. Last two questions then for you, Pierre, which will give us more of an insight into who you are. So could you explain to us one of your best ever trades, either in terms of P&L or setup percentage return, and what you learned from that process?
I think despite round tripping it fully, I would still consider the 2017 trades on Litecoin and XRP to be very strong in my trading journey, mostly because I feel like it were the kind of trade where you could go through every kind of emotions, and it basically, I feel like it's trade that I've made me realize, oh, I wanted to approach the market for the rest. So even if they ended up being catastrophic trades in terms of returns, I feel like they were very good trade in terms of lessons. Another one that I would have in mind would be an obscure shitcoin on UOB back in 2019, which was called Till. I don't even know if the project is alive anymore. To be honest, I had no idea what it was neither back then. But it was a period of time where we were working on the system, adjusting the system with another trader in crypto Twitter, Krila. I don't know if you see who he is. But basically, this was the beginning of the foundation of the trending system. And back in the days, we were chasing reversal pattern on the weekly chart on very dead shitcoins on UOB, and basically wait for the algos to trigger and try to ride through the algos, which often resulted in what we were calling U patterns. So absolutely decimating charts, building a floor for a few months into some abrupt reversal of algo triggering, basically. And after that, I would say that the best trades ever since were in terms of P&L, but also in terms of system finally really making sense, were obviously Solunavax, one digit to three digits for the three of them back in the days. That was very nice. And I would say the last two very good trades, in my opinion, were the being flat on Bitcoin from 60K to 20K and being back in position as soon as the daily trend flipped back in the days, up until the 60K break recently. So it's fun because I feel like it's been mostly shit up until the last 18 months. So maybe it says a lot about the shitcoin itself. but yeah, I feel like, yeah, I would say it that way. In the most important trades, for different reasons each, I would say it was the 2017 first trade into UOB days in 2019, the Solunavax last cycle, and finally Bitcoin the last 2 years, mostly because finally I was able not to round trip anything after the end of a cycle, and not get bullied by the fairly strong bear market that we've had. I still have a lot of things to figure out. Maybe it was a lucky shot, but even if it was, I'm starting a new cycle, basically where I ended the last bull market. So it's a fairly good thing to start with.
Absolutely. I love your example about the Bitcoin move from 60K to 20K, because sometimes the best trades are the ones that you just don't take.
Exactly. And this was pretty much that. Well, everything that I consider to be what I want to see to be in position and betting on upside on Bitcoin is not there anymore. So may as well just sit on my hands for some time.
Absolutely. And so then final question for you, Pierre. What was one of your worst trades ever and something you learned from that?
That's a good question. I've had a shitload of bad trades. I couldn't even count.
I've had maybe 50, 60 guests on here. Some of them are very high profile crypto Twitter traders. And they've all said the same thing, right? Like every trader has had a log of bad trades.
To be fair, I feel like every losing trade is painful on itself. But I've had some very bad trade. I would say maybe the last one that really hurt was actually being short ETH, not leading to the news itself of the ETF approval, but waking up on Monday and seeing the political shift towards it, flipping in front of my face and basically round tripping almost the entirety of the position while it was a very good edge and strong position. That must be the most painful recent trade because it's the one that felt like the least expected turn of event, but it's a good punishment for myself. I think it's a good one. But to be honest, the very shittiest trade I've made was likely not going full-time trading earlier, to be honest. And it's not something that I would encourage anyone to do because it's a fucking complicated thing to do and it's a hard job and it's shitty a lot of times. But I feel like I could have, when I realized how much RAM it freed in my brain not to be doing my job in the sideline and not doing just that crypto thing during the day, night time, I feel like I could be a step further in my journey if I had done that before, and that maybe I was a little bit too conservative when I to take this decision before, which I believe is a very French thing to do, like a little bit of fear of taking too much risks. And maybe if I did that before, I would be a step further in my trading. A recent ETH short, plus the fact that I should have trusted myself before and not wait for 2021 to actually go full time.
Fair enough. I think that's a very, very good piece of advice for anyone who's been listening. Well, Pierre, this has been a real delight to have you on the Crypto Narratives podcast. We got to dive into your system. We got to learn a lot more about your trading journey and a bit about your current market thoughts. So you're always welcome back on the podcast, but thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, with pleasure, mate. That was very good to be here. And don't hesitate. It was fun chatting with you. So if we had to do a second one, that would be a pleasure.
Amazing. Thank you so much, dude.
Cheers, mate.
The Crypto Narratives podcast hosts conversations with thought leaders in the blockchain industry. Nothing in this episode can be constituted as financial advice, nor a solicitation to invest in any of the protocols and tokens mentioned. For more details, please visit the Pair Protocol Discord.